This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Thursday, July 1st, 2021. And we're looking at a market. It is sort of lacking in energy. There's no signs of trouble. We had a pretty sideways session, a little bit of a negative session in Europe yesterday, sideways session in the US, and overnight a bit mixed as well. A reminder here at the top of the show, today we are hosting a webinar on our Q3 outlook. We've been talking a lot about that in recent days, so I won't reiterate what it's all about, but just a reminder, you can sign up and join today at what time is it? 1 o'clock European time. So 12 o'clock British Standard Time. And you can see the report on go2.saxo/QO. Have a look at that for our outlook for the third quarter, especially focusing on Europe and this German election. Very interesting times for Europe, potentially in the wake of that, as we look for whether they're going to be pulling together or sort of spinning slowly towards some more existential situation once again. All right, let's look at the not the daily action, but I zoomed out a bit because there's nothing really new technical-wise developing in U.S. equities that we haven't covered this week. But on slide three, just showing the, I put the QQQ in because it's an easy way to pull up the NASDAQ 100. That's the ETF of the NASDAQ 100. That's in black. And then you can see, and I'll tell you, I'd like to bring you into the conversation here after I've run through this on your impression. But you see the so the NASDAQ 100 in black, and then you have the 10-year yield in orange there, where we've seen a sort of range bound since peaking out around the 1st of April. So we've had all of Q2 effectively. We've seen U.S. longer yields settling lower, even though at the tail end of the quarter here, we're seeing this interest in pricing in a Fed tightening. So we're seeing, and that's what the blue line is showing, that the curve, the shape of the curve is flattening. So I just posed the question, I don't have an answer yet. So have we seen peak steepness in the US yield curve? And are we headed for yield curve flattening? If the answer to that is yes, I think it has pretty profound consequences. But I'll tell you, what are your thoughts on the shape of the yield curve and where we are here as we're entering into a new quarter?
Well, John, I think that it's pretty natural that the yield curve will continue to bear flatten, meaning that the front part of the yield curve will rise faster than the longer part of the yield curve. And that's normal when there is a change in monetary policies. So we are expecting a tapering. So the front part of the yield curve should be more reactive than the longer part of the yield curve. However, as we get towards autumn and the transitory nature of inflation is in discussion, and we might have some sign that there are more permanent signs of inflation, then also the longer part of the yield curve will need to rise. And at that point, we might see a bear steepener, so the longer part of the yield curve rising. But you know, like in the long term, I see the yield curve shifting higher, in the short term flattening and there, and then slightly steepening. But definitely for summer, this summer, it's more likely to see a flattener.
Yeah, and then it's just interesting to note, while still on that chart, that long slide in the Treasury yield curve and flattening of it from basically 2015 all the way through all the way through towards the end of 2019, really, except for the one brief period when there was excitement around the election of Donald Trump there in late 2016. So pretty big sometimes, these shifts in the yield curve. They often last for years. And then just specifically for today, because we are lurching into a new quarter, Q3, end of Q2 is yesterday. And the reason we bring that up is the issue we've been talking about so much, and that is the growth in this Fed reverse repo facility, fed to some degree by just the ongoing massive treasury and MBS purchases in the U.S. and potentially into quarter end as banks offload or trying to reduce their balance sheet size to avoid regulatory penalties that are linked to the size of the bank's balance sheets. And it reached yesterday towards almost $1 trillion, so over $990 billion in the facility. And this will be a key focus just as we get our feet wet in this new quarter. Is there a bit more dynamism in the Treasury market, not just linked to, for example, tomorrow's U.S. jobs data, but simply because of maybe some of these liquidity effects that are linked to quarter end that may be suppressing U.S. Treasury yields are faded. Certainly the aspect of balance sheet reduction by banks is going to fade for now. There is another month before the Treasury reaches the end of its process of drawing down the general account. There could be another $200 to $250 billion of liquidity added from that angle. So this may not be an issue until August 1st, but it's something that bears watching. U.S. Treasury yields so important on that front for yields. What are your thoughts on that, Althea? And then your next slide there, slide five, on potential for yield volatility around the U.S. jobs report.
Well, definitely, John, in the next few days, we might see that the demand of the reverse repo facility falling, like you said, and then rising again when we see the Treasuries basically slashing the TGA at the Federal Reserve. However, I still think that going into the jobs market, the liquidity that we are witnessing to in money market is pivotal into controlling yields throughout the whole yield curve. Because as we mentioned in other calls, all these money market liquidity is controlling the front part of it, of the yield curve. But there are reports out there showing that the banks prefer to work on 10 years yields rather than keeping them cash. So basically means that all of these liquidity is controlling also longer maturities. And obviously, tomorrow we have the non-farm payrolls. Our focus is on wages, which are expected to grow 3.6% year on year, which is the highest since the global financial crisis. If there is a surprise on the upside, there might be some volatility in the bond market. However, it will be contained because of what we just said, the liquidity that is controlling yield and compressing them. So when you go on slide five, my take initially was that before summer, we would have seen 10 years U.S. Treasury yields stabilizing between 1.5 and 1.70%. But it looks very much that right now they are starting to stabilize with between 1.4 and 1.5. We might know that better tomorrow, but it is very important to know that right now there is no way that whatever the surprise is, yields cannot break the resistance of 1.7%, just because there is too many elements that are compressing yields right now. And we really need the Federal Reserve to engage into tapering talks in order to see those yields going higher.
Right. And that'll bring me to the dollar discussion in a moment. But Ola, I need to get over to you because there's something that's moving a lot more than treasuries or the dollar or equities at the moment. And that's certain commodity prices, especially food yesterday, or grains at least yesterday, a massive jump. What's going on here?
Well, we had the quarterly stock report and annual acreage report from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the market had anticipated that these very high prices that we witnessed now over the last 9 months, that they would spur increase for acreage use by farmers, just taking advantage of the higher prices to generate higher incomes. And so the surveys were basically pointing towards some very high acreage numbers. As you can see here on slide eight, the reality was somewhat more somewhat disappointing. We saw lower acreage than expected, both for corn and soybeans. At the same time, stock levels continued to dwindle. As you can see in our small comments there, stock levels in wheat, corn, and soybeans there are somewhere between 6 and 7 year lows. And it basically raised the question, what will happen this autumn and winter? Because right now, with the acres lower, that basically means millions of tons of less production already at a time where stocks are on the weak side. So we're back to most certainly watching the weather because it's a very weather-driven market right now, and it's just even now more exposed to adverse weather, which we are currently seeing both North and South America. Cold weather in the South, very hot weather in the North, and it just raises the continued risk of increased volatility for grain. So I just put in corn there as an example. It went limit up yesterday, and up 6.3%. It's trading a little bit high again today. It's still within the range we've been recently. But as I said, really, we need to keep an eye on the weather developments, because we are potentially facing some tricky situation into the autumn and winter.
I don't want to speculate too much on the potential upside there. That sounds pretty dire, actually, if the supply situation does not shape up in good fashion over that time period. And then in FX, as mentioned earlier, so the slightly curious thing to me is that we haven't seen much happening in terms of Fed expectations. The ADP private payrolls yesterday, we did get a nominal headline surprise for the June print, but then there was a downward revision to the May data point that was exactly offsetting. So basically zero surprise in either direction on that figure. U.S. yields doing nothing, neither Fed expectations nor the longer end of the curve, but the dollar nonetheless managed to push through stronger. Could have been some more quarter end flows, what have you. Regardless, dollar yen, for example, reaching towards those new highs above 111. The next chart point there is not really until 114.50. It seems to me we would need some sort of new lows and yields new highs in yields, or at least a pretty, steep sell-off for U.S. Treasuries to get that support a move towards that 114.50 level. Euro dollar also posting local lows. The big focus there, the sub 118 sort of neckline area that I've talked about, and the 117 pivot. The first key for that would be, again, more dynamism in Treasury yields as this new quarter unfolds, anticipation of tapering, and then whether we get a strong U.S. June jobs report tomorrow. Just to round out the fixed income discussion, I'll say there was a big 10-year BTP auction that saw lower yields in Europe. So still appetite for peripheral stuff, even at these low yields.
Yes, definitely, John. The thing is that in terms of risk rewards, Italy is the best option within the European sovereign space, because it's also the highest yielding sovereign in the euro space. Like, it's still offering a pickup over Greece, just to remember this factor. And also, we cannot forget that Italy has just secured around 200 billion worth of fund under the Next Generation EU fund, and that Draghi is leading the country to the next elections in 2023. So it's not surprising to have seen a very solid auction yesterday that drove also yields in the euro area lower. And we expect the spread between BTP and the bunds to continue to tighten and probably stabilize around 75 basis points, which was where they were trading before the European sovereign crisis. However, today, my focus is on France and Spanish long-term auctions. OATs and Spain is to sell 5, 7, and 30 years bonos. But as you can see on slide 6 on the graph on the right, since the beginning of the year until today, both France 20 years and Spain 30 years lost around 15% of their value. In terms of yield, we are still talking about pretty low yields. France is offering for that 20 years maturity around 0.6% in yield, and Spain for 30 years 1.4% maturity. Today, the European bond market looks like opening a little bit softer. So I'm just wondering if we see some volatility spurred from these auctions, since that they are offering an extremely low yield and the duration is extremely long. It might be a sign that investors don't want to buy anymore into duration at this point in time.
Yeah, it was also interesting to note since we are rolling into the new quarter, the longer Treasury is opening quite soft overnight as well. We talked a bit earlier about food inflation, Ole, but there's another market that's rising, both actually in North America and in Europe, but very different reasons. I suppose, but it's natural gas. This is an important input price for a lot of industries and for heating and et cetera.
In Asia as well, and that's also part of the equation. Yes, you're absolutely right. If you look at slide 9, I'm just highlighting, I think we mentioned in a previous podcast, this continued rally we have in the European gas market. The Dutch TTF gas first month contract, which is really the benchmark for price across Europe, just made a new, I believe it's a 13-year high yesterday, approaching 35 euros a megawatt. It is I put in some of the reasons for it, but and I think the combination of low stock levels that we've seen following a very long winter, and Gazprom basically not wanting to supply more gas through its Ukrainian pipeline system, is really starting to unnerve the market, because we are also heading into a maintenance season on two other Russian to German pipelines. At the same time, also maintenance affecting Norwegian supplies. And as you mentioned, John, we've got rising prices elsewhere, and we've got an even stronger rally right now in Asia, which basically means that LNG shipments, LNG cargoes are being diverted to where the price is the best, and that's currently in Asia. So we are at risk of a potential supply shock. The side effects are higher coal prices and higher emission prices, because if you burn more coal, you need to buy more emissions. And there's also an article today in the FT, basically Ukraine accusing Russians of playing Russian roulette with or blackmailing the gas market, because they basically want to get the Nord Stream approval through, Nord Stream 2, which is going to go online next year. So there's a speculation in the market that Russia is basically artificially holding back supplies in order to force a decision on this Nord Stream 2 pipeline.
Interesting tactic. Let's see if it pays off for them. And then I noticed yesterday we saw that sell-off in gold, but most of that, or basically all of that sell-off of the last couple of days has reversed. A lot of coincidence stuff that indicates whether it should sell off or rally here, but I guess it's technically interesting.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And the only thing I can see that's different from yesterday to today is that we're into a new quarter, because, as you mentioned, the dollar has strengthened overnight and yields are doing nothing, as Altea is saying. And despite of this, we are seeing the market bounce. And part of the story is probably also the fact that we probably saw a bigger than warranted reaction recently in this gold weakness, because real yields are basically more or less where they were from before the FOMC meeting. The dollar is the trigger. And now with the dollar even strengthening further and gold managing to find some support, could indicate that the selling pressure has run out of steam. I'm keeping a close eye on silver. If we break above 2630, then that recent outperformance against gold potentially could continue. So some of the pull in gold is also coming from a recovery in silver, which is holding above that key 200-day moving average.
All right, and the earnings season, hardly anything to report there. H&M out today with a better-than-expected report. They've cut jobs, they've cut the number of stores, and they're talking about their sales actually managing to reach back near pre-pandemic levels and the promising outlook for a dividend later this year. So reasonably good news. And you can see on the chart on slide 11 that the price is effectively recovered back to, it has traded actually at times above the pre-pandemic highs there in 2000 from 2019. And then on the calendar today, very briefly, we have a Riksbank meeting this morning. I'm not expecting anything there. The market is working up a little bit of a view on eventual rate hikes down the road. We've seen the two-year rate rise several basis points together with short rates elsewhere. But with all the political uncertainty, I'm not sure they want to send a lot of loud signals here. The latest CPI print came down quite sharply from the peak of 2.5% at the core. Bank of England's governor, he's out speaking today. It's at Mansion House, so it could be a larger, set of thoughts he may have. I guess the lean would be, since we had a slightly dovish, more dovish than expected BOE meeting recently, that it'd be easier to surprise on the hawkish side. So watch for that. The June ISM manufacturing up, but the focus of the week is on tomorrow's U.S. jobs report, and let's not forget earnings as well, although the whole earnings bit is a bit buried in a lot of the difficult things like lower paid jobs coming back online, which has seen a lot of these average hour earnings drop, etc. But we'll see what kind of information we can pull from that. It is the most important macro event risk of the week. Until then, that's it for today, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.